Welcome, everyone. Before we get to the student representative, we want to take a moment of silence for Bob Savitt. He was 93 years old. He was a retired superintendent of the district for 21 years. He retired in 1979. So a moment of silence. Thank you. High school representative?
I'll just mention, by the way, that he was superintendent long enough that he actually signed my diploma, which was not chiseled in stone, but anyway, so he should listen.
Good afternoon, everyone. And so the high school winter sports began. And student government is planning to have a student section for a certain amount of high school students to attend to the boys' varsity basketball games. And we had parents' night out last week. Report cards were posted last Wednesday. And we're well into the second quarter. And the sad blood drive occurred, and approximately 100 pints were donated. Last week was also the fall play, which put on a theme of the 20th century. And there was also DECA Financial Literacy Day, where high school students taught middle school students about how important it is to be financially literate. And there was an early dismissal drill, which was successfully implemented. And this week we have World Language Honor inductions coming up for French, Spanish, and sign language. And many concerts are also coming up this December. And there's a MetMonk conference coming up in the 12th and the 13th. All right, thank you.
Board announcements. Emily?
I just wanted to mention, this isn't something I've attended, but I thought it was a really nice initiative that I'd read about as a parent, which is that we have college fairs and activity fairs, and I thought it was great that one of the things that they'll be doing is a community service fair where students can look at, you know, find out about different volunteer organizations, and I thought that was a great and creative way to involve the community and match students up with volunteer opportunities. I just wanted to mention that. Shout out to Guidance for that.
I have two things. I wanted to mention that today is the PTA blood drive. I was there this morning. I left some flyers on the table if anyone would like to take one, but they're there at POB Middle School till 9:30 tonight. So after you leave here, if you'd like to go there, you know, it's very important to donate blood. It saves lives, and the blood drives are important because, especially during holiday time, there's a shortage of blood and, you know, a lot of accidents, and there's a dire need for blood. My other thing was, which was already mentioned, I attended the high school fall play, the 20th century, which, as usual, I saw Dr. Lewis in his garage there. It's fabulous. And kudos to Mr. Olivari and the cast and the crew of 20th Century. They did a fabulous job. And I just want to say, you know, everybody loves the musicals, and I love the musicals too, and I think we do a fabulous job, but there's something about a drama where you're so close to the actors, and it's just so, you know, so raw. They're right there in front of you. There's no music and dancing and costumes. It's just, the kids were fabulous, so kudos to them. That's
it. Thank you. Last week, I attended POB Middle School PTA bond presentation, and prior to Mr. Ruff and Dr. Lewis coming to make this presentation, the PTA had a very, very interesting presentation by Laura Bernhardt. She's a math teacher at the high school who also does part-time coding for the district, and she talked about the hour of code, which is just absolutely fascinating. Of course, it's part of our STEAM initiative. This, she talked about the fifth and sixth graders logging on in the lab, writing code via code.org. The students choose their own self-guided tutorials. It's a one-hour activity. And the concept of coding, she was explaining, is applicable to all curricula that students can take advantage of. Code.org is free access at home, so students and parents can also be partners in this endeavor together. I'm not sure, I have to ask POB, she said the POB website, our website will have the Hour of Code as a link. Is that up? That's up already?
No, it's not up yet.
But it will be up. Okay. Currently, she's conducting this initiative about coding K-6, and she's looking to expand it to seventh and eighth graders. So I really wanted to make note of it and thank her, and it's just a terrific initiative for our students, 21st century technology.
Thank you. I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. I took a little break. It was my first Thanksgiving without my son, so I'm a little blue. They grow up. So, you know, when you know that you have taught kids well and they're able to do everything on their own, it's just an amazing feeling to watch them do conducting the lessons that you taught. And I got an opportunity to see our high school chorus at the interfaith service and then at the Christmas tree lighting. No teacher accompanied them. They had student conductors and they were magnificent. They were absolutely so. Kudos to the teacher who taught them not only to produce these wonderful sounds, but also taught them the conducting skills. It's just a remarkable, it was wonderful. They spoke so well of our program. So I want to say thank you to the chorus teacher at the high school. And then I also saw the fall play, and that was an amazing, and I, you know, Amy has said that, but just an amazing event. I was a little disappointed that the audience, there was no audience. These kids have rehearsed so much, so we have to think about ways that we can get an audience, because they spent so much time. They did it to perfection. It just really, I had a wonderful time. I was so tired. I said, okay, all right, I'm going to leave during intermission because I was really, really tired. But I couldn't leave because they were so good. I wanted to see how the end, what the end was, and just amazing. And I want to thank the high school for their production. Next week is the Hour of Code Week. The entire district will be engaged in the Hour of Code. Last year, we only had a few classes. It went so well because the children who participated ended up teaching other children. Again, when children started teaching others, you know you hit on something that's really, really good. So we are going to have across the district an Hour of Code, and we have been entered into a global competition, I've gone on, I've actually registered myself in a global competition to see whether we can outmatch other districts across the globe. And I have every faith in our district. I think we could do it. And we are doing this kindergarten through 12. Kindergarten. Our kindergarten students, I've met some kindergarten parents, and they are excited about what their kindergarten children came home and explained about the Hour of Coding. So even in kindergarten, they're coding. K through 12. Now, you know that that was a board initiative, and we are not just doing it because it's a board initiative. It's a great initiative, and it's exciting kids. And when we have exciting things that engage kids and excite kids, we like to do it. So thank you to Laura, who's bringing it to us, and for the board for providing those resources. It will change what we do in our classrooms.
We'll have an update at the December 15th, how that went.
Mr. Ruff and Ms. Ehring, who is our Director of Security, to present the voting security plan. Of course, you know, we won't give you all the details because one of the things we've learned from all the various incidents around the country is that you don't divulge every single detail of your security plan, but we want, you know, but we want to assure you of the plan for December 9th and going forward. So, Mr. Ruff and Ms. Searing.
Thank you. We looked at many different components related to, and we'll speak primarily about Old Bethpage, but really this is also a POB middle school as well, and Jamaica Ave, but to a lesser extent at Jamaica Ave. It's not a school building of ours. We took a look from the moment the car enters into the parking, having designated parking for staff, the poll workers, for the voters. We've changed the vote location from the gymnasium to the all-purpose room. There will be security guards, a total of 4 security guards on staff, as well as additional personnel with the flow of traffic. There's redundancy in place that takes into account breaks for the security guards, as well as lunch, so that we have those areas covered. This one's a little bit easier for us because the poll workers this time work directly for us, so that just means communication's easier for us to with them. They will be wearing identification badges. The only area other than the all-purpose room that the poll workers can go to would be a staff bath that's directly across the hall, and again manned but with security. To ensure that there's not travel by anyone, voters or poll workers in other areas of the building. In addition to signage, identification, security with redundancy, we've done training with emergency procedures with all the stakeholders so that they know exactly what to do in case there's an emergency. So we've gone back to the drawing board. We've really changed the design of this, spent a lot of time communicating this plan with the various stakeholders, including the principal, head custodian, director of facilities, director of security and safety for the district. And we're going to do everything that we can to get this one right. So we appreciate the resources that you've provided us, and we look forward to the 9th.
You mentioned designated parking for the staff, but what about traffic flow for the people coming to vote? I know you have a plan, and you didn't mention.
Yeah, the traffic flow. There will be a POB vehicle that will greet people once they come on to both staff members and voters and parents, and will direct people accordingly to the area. So really the staff is primarily in the back of the building. The voters themselves are only a few feet away from the direct entrance into the all-purpose room, which is a good thing because they don't have to travel large distances. And the poll workers are in a separate parking area as well. So. We're a few permanent spots short. Another thing we did is we counted cars, counted staff members, counted spots. We're a few permanent spots short, but we've made some alternative arrangements with a few of our staff members in terms of parking at Old Bethpage to accommodate that.
And you mentioned that security staff was trained for an emergency, but are they trained? You know, I know that was one of the problems last time. Trained what we expect of them that day as far as not letting people walk in the courtyard or not, you know, taking a break without letting someone know? Are they, in general, trained what we need them to do that day?
Yep. There is different personnel that will be on there. Some are former law enforcement, so they have training, not only the training we provide here and the training that's required to be a school security officer, but many of them have years upon years of training from previous employment, or in some cases active employment that they're in now. So they know the district's security procedures. They have means of communication, and they know specifically who's to travel where within with respect to the building. Some of the things that we went into different scenarios, if a parent who voted also wanted to go into the main office. You know, they know to respectfully ask the parent to go into the regular main entrance, not to just only the to. They would have to leave, and that's the normal protocol. And I know that may, you know, I don't think it will upset people, but you know, that's the level that we're going through in terms of this.
One more quick question. So just to make sure that parents are notified, because if voting is moved to the cafeteria, some parents might think they can't buy lunch. Did we let parents know that they can buy lunch? Just they might think, they might assume that
yep.
it's off.
We'll follow up. That's okay. That's a good
thank you.
So I see some new faces in the audience. So those who have already seen the bond presentation, we'll do a quick overview of the bond. The bond will occur next Tuesday. So let's do a quick review of what we're.
The superintendent said quick twice, so I got it. On October 14th, the board adopted a resolution for a $49.8 million bond referendum that will simply transform each of our buildings here in the district, really focusing obviously on security, air conditioning in large spaces, and then infrastructure projects, including but not limited to floor replacements, ceiling replacements, lighting replacements, ADA accessibility, infrastructure upgrades related technology to support education, and solar works. Part of it is energy savings, and between the window replacement projects, solar projects, automatic temperature control, lighting replacement, we anticipate an average savings of approximately $240,000 a year. This is an example of a window curtain wall. This would be original to the building system. This entire wall will be replaced. That will take place at Stratford Road, POB Middle School, also Pasadena and Parkway. All would have major, all the windows in those buildings will be replaced, completely transforming our district's buildings. This is a smaller window replacement project at Jamaica Ave. You can just see these average between 15 to 20 years beyond their useful life and time to be done. Concrete work that would occur, tennis reconstruction projects for us, lighting and ceiling replacement. These types of projects have quick paybacks, anywhere from 3 to 4 years. In addition to the list of items that added up to the $49.8 million are some B-list items. We aren't going to exceed the $49.8 million, but there's some items in addition to when the A-list comes in under budget that we as a board and community can take a look at a later date considering, and there'd be a smaller number of things. To just get an idea of the cost, the impact to the average homeowner is approximately $196 annually, and that's for a 20-year period. If anybody has any more questions related to cost, please feel free to give me a call, and I can give you the dollar amount on your actual home, what the impact would be. Timeline is the vote is December 9th. The design phase would be from for the next year, and then we send that design up to the state for approval. They're our approving agent for our building permits, and then we would go out to bid. These are public works jobs, and the construction phase would be primary. You know, most of the construction would take place during the summer, and there'd be some things that happen in off hours, but we always keep an eye towards student safety whenever construction were to occur. So vote is on December 9th at our usual locations for our budget votes. From 6 to 9. If anybody's got any questions, please feel free to give me a call. I'd be more than happy to discuss it. Lots of information on the website as well.
So last week we had a very unique opportunity to explore digital citizenship at the secondary level. All the initiatives were led by our director of guidance, and just lots of different things that occurred, and Ms. Girash will lead us through. Would you come forward?
Sure, yeah. I just want to introduce some of the staff members and some special guests who are here tonight to join Ms. Lynn in the presentation. As you know, all of these special projects and things that we do don't come with one person running them. There's clearly a team of people behind Ms. Lynn running this. So we have counselors from both the middle school and high school here this evening, Carolyn Zona, our library coordinator, social workers, teachers, and administrators who all participated in the planning of this event. When I say we have some special guests, we have some students here tonight who created some public service announcements, and Ms. Lynn, in sharing some of the activities that were going on during the week, had sent me one of the videos that the kids had created, and I literally was in awe and said that these kids could do a TV commercial. And when I was just kind of doing some research on this, I looked, so they create this. No, they did this on their own at home. So even more amazing and impressive. And I think the students can clearly got the message. So I am so impressed and so happy to have some of our students joining us here this evening. So I just want to ask our students to stand up a bit who are here to join us. Let me give them a big round of applause. They're going to come up. They're going to come up and join us in the presentation and show some of the things that they've done. So I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Lynn right now, but I hope everybody was able to get a sense of some of the activities by the brochures that we had out on the table this evening.
Great. Thank you so much, and thank you all for having us present tonight. I am so excited to be here to talk about Digital Citizenship Week. You know, as Ms. Girash said, it certainly was not just my doing. We worked together as a team, and I have to say the enthusiasm of this group of people just made it so much fun, and you know, we're raring to go for next year already, right? We've already talked about that. So the idea of Digital Citizenship Week really came from a conversation that I had with Dr. Lewis last spring, I think, when we were talking about how are we communicating with our students and our community around the topics of internet safety. And so I was excited to sort of look into that and put out a request district-wide to faculty and staff for volunteers to join me on a district-wide committee to explore that a little bit. We had several meetings last spring. We decided to focus on grades 5 to 12 for this year, thinking that we'll start small and we'll see where it goes. Really, the excitement just took off in those three buildings. We also decided to create building-level subcommittees. So we thought about, really talked a lot about coming up with grade-level themes, because although, you know, these are topics that we've addressed with our students in different ways, we really wanted the time to kind of dig into them a little more deeply. And so we decided on grade level themes, staying consistent, but we wanted building level committees because we figured that we wanted to provide each of the buildings some flexibility in terms of how all of those activities would look. So we're going to kind of hear from our committee members about the different activities through the building. So we're going to start with our high school people. Come up, high school people. Jason Miller and Jody Cudler. Talk about the high school.
Hi, thank you. We broke it down by each grade level, and I'll talk to you a little bit about what we did in each of the grade levels. In the ninth grade, in the English and Social Studies classrooms, those students were given the opportunity to have conversations with their teachers to discuss the differences between plagiarism and academic honesty. A lot of the students we found had some troubles associating what they're allowed to use from the web and what they're not allowed to use from the web. The teachers allotted a certain period of time in the classroom to go over that, and the teachers that I spoke with told me that it really went past that time that they allotted because the classroom was really engaged in the conversation that was had. In the 10th grade, we used the health classes to identify identity theft and online safety.
So really, they were taught, the health classes did a full period presentation with some follow-up work, and they really talked about online identity, online reputation, and in particular, identity theft. And when we think as adults of identity theft, we think about our credit card being stolen, our license, our social security, but here it was really about your identity and your reputation being stolen, about your password, about your privacy, about the things that you're posting online and being misrepresented by someone who may originally have been your friend and are no longer your friend. And it was really, I got a chance to sit in on one of the presentations and it was really quite good and the students were really engaged and very interested because this is what is really going on in their world.
In the 11th grade, we decided to now rather use a classroom setting because it's difficult for us to get control of every 11th grader at the same time. So what we decided to do is we opened it up building-wide. And we used the QR codes as a means to get a hold of all the students that were interested in this. And what we talked about using those QR codes is it allowed students to have links to various websites, articles, videos, discussing college and career digital communication. So we always talk about the negative side of social media, and we didn't want to really focus on that. We wanted to focus better on how to use social media for the positive sides of things. We talk about college admissions a lot, and what happens when they find you. But I'd rather the students think about how they can use social media to enhance themselves, to highlight all the positive things that they can do. So there were QR codes set around the building. We also placed QR codes on little stands that you would see in a cafeteria setting, in the cafeteria, as well as the library. So we were hoping that students that were sitting around, studying, meeting with their friends, had the opportunity to click and get more information regarding those topics that we provided them. We also then provided a ninth grade presentation, a ninth period presentation for those students to have further conversation that wanted to.
Which was really open to the whole school, not just the 11th grade.
Right. And then in the 12th grade, we used the health classes to reach all of our seniors, and we were discussing the psychology of your digital footprint. So really interesting topic that Mr. Bolin, our assistant principal of the high school, presented to each class. And what he was discussing is how you use social media to enhance your self-image, how it hurts your self-image, and how the like button is almost like social currency for these students, and how they collect this social currency, and what goes into your thought process when you're posting pictures that you choose to post. So I had an opportunity to sit on that presentation. It was awesome. It was really engaging. The students really left, I think, leaving that presentation thinking about how they're, you know, marketing themselves using social media. With that, we're going to allow Erica Gray to speak about the middle school.
Thank you. So I'm going to continue with the grade level themes, and I'm going to speak on behalf of both middle schools because we shared these. For grade 5, we had your digital footprint, and that kind of echoes the sentiments that Jason was talking about and putting out the positives. Students are using the internet and social media more and more, so we really wanted to educate them on the permanence of what they put out there, but really to highlight the positives because they can use it to their benefit. Grade 6, we had Think Before You Post, and we focused on the THINK acronym, which stands for, is it true, is it helpful, is it inspiring, is it necessary, and is it kind? And we wanted to encourage them to think twice before they do anything on the internet or social media and kind of make those behaviors ones that they are proud of. We also wanted to remind them that their words and actions can affect others. So that theme covered that. For grade 7, we focused on cyberbullying, and we had police officer Galvin come in and lead an assembly, really discussing the legal implications and the emotional ramifications of inappropriate and irresponsible internet and social media usage. And she shared that with both seventh grades at both middle schools. And finally, grade 8, our theme was creating a positive online profile, and we had some wonderful peer mentors from the high school come down and lead a discussion for our 8th graders. So I'm going to hand it off to Sam Goldberg, Marley Cohen, and Matt Salkin so they can share that.
Hi, everyone. My name is Marley Cohen, and I, along with Sam, Matt, and a few other peer mentors, attended both POB Middle School and Madeline Middle School to discuss the positive aspects of social media and the negative aspects of social media. We felt it was important as eighth graders transitioning into high school that they know that creating a positive social media profile is very important in order to get into college, for job interviews, and just to have a successful high school career. So
We talked about the apps that they use most of the time, since they will understand what most of them do on the app. So we talked about more of the positives and the negatives of the app and how they could really use the apps to show their community service they've done, how to show their achievements on there. So when colleges look you up in the future, that they see the good, not the bad.
In both middle schools, we played a little game, and we would make them put their heads down, and then we'd say, for example, have you ever posted something good on Facebook or posted something bad? And we felt that a lot of them learned a lot and raised their hand, and even if it was bad, they realized what they have to do to build a better positive online profile for the future. So we feel that the PowerPoints in both schools were really important and really got to them.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Talone. I'm the librarian over at POBMS. I'm just quickly going to discuss some of the things we did at the middle school at POBMS. We first offered the teachers, we put out there, we made available to them a series of lesson plans relating to their grade level theme. We had that available in the office. We had resources also available on the library media website. For those teachers that wanted to address it in the classroom, we allowed them the autonomy to do that. Some of them wanted to bring their classes into the library, which was fantastic for me. I got to work with about 500 students, and we did a series of activities, interactive activities. I gave them each a digital passport, showed them a little video relating to their grade level theme. We discussed what their grade level theme meant, the bigger picture, and then they got the opportunity to participate in these interactive activities, such as creating digital superheroes, creating a digital citizenship comic strip. There were some digital passport games they got to play as well, some videos with some follow-up activities, and they knew that if they got one stamp for each activity, if they got four stamps on their passport, they got to enter themselves into a raffle for an iTunes card, which was a huge success. So it was great. It was great. Now Joanna Gentile is going to talk briefly about some of the building-wide activities.
Hi, everyone. So one of our goals was to also reach as many of the students in our school as we could. And so for the students that weren't able to make it down to the library or didn't get a piece of it in their classroom, we had a map activity going on, which is our digital map pledge. So what that entailed was a pledge that was electronically sent to all of the map groups. And within their map groups, the students were able to sign electronically this pledge that was then printed and hung up for the rest of the school to see that they were committing to be a digital citizen, committing to take ownership of what they do online and really let these activities sink in. So by signing that, it kind of reached all of the students in our building that they got a little piece of this citizenship in them. And in addition to not only, like a lot of the peer mentors said, not just learning about the negatives, but the positives, a lot of positive things that you can do online. We had the public library come in to our library with Mrs. Solon, and one of the activities was the librarian showing them how to download ebooks and music free and legally. So instead of pirating music and things like that, there are apps that we pay for at the public library that the students can use, and that was a big hit. They were able to download free songs, and they were using their devices, and that was a really big success. And for each of those activities, they also got a stamp. So, and the library is also raffling off a Kindle if they bring their passports there, so it gets more of our students in the library, in the public library as well. So it kind of connects the two buildings. And then we have some testimonials from our students about their participation.
Hi, I'm Elena Alderizio. I'm for Digital Citizen. They did a time assembly with high school students who taught us that you can use the internet for good things. And going into high school, I'm going to want to do that so you can get major colleges. And we got taught about how we can put the internet for good things rather than bad things.
I'm Ryan Pager, and I'm a digital citizen because I got my passport. By doing activities on the computer, you can get stamps to win prizes.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, and from our Matlin team, Dave Goldberg and Andrew Luzzi.
Hi, Good evening, everyone. At Madeline, we had a variety of grade level events that centered around each theme. In fifth and sixth grade, each class received a library presentation done by Kyle Quenenville, who's our library specialist, either on understanding your digital footprint or the Think model, depending on the grade. In addition, fifth and sixth graders also had the opportunity to complete a series of online activities that went over appropriate and safe technology use. If they completed a certain number, they were able to receive a certificate that says that they completed a digital passport. Seventh and eighth graders had grade level assemblies, so police officer Galvin came to discuss cyberbullying. And the high school peer mentors came and visited the eighth grade to talk about a positive digital profile. Seventh and eighth grade teachers were able to facilitate discussions within the classroom following each presentation to go over what all the students learned.
Hi, everybody. Dave Goldberg, school counselor at Matlin. Just a couple of things globally what we did at Matlin. If you came and walked around Matlin Middle School for a little bit, you saw digital footprints all over the place. This was a nice map activity that all the kids participated in. And the thing that I like about these are, it's not just what not to do, it's what to do to really enhance your technology skills and to be a digital citizen, which was really nice. Another map activity that all our kids received, it was a nice connection between community and school. Kids got Think stickers to go along with the Think acronym, and besides going over in MAP and in classes about what Think really is, these students were asked to bring these home and put them on some piece of technology. So we're hoping these are all around people's houses and they can't get them off, which was a nice thing. And actually had some parents call in and said, you know, that this is a nice piece, especially for the younger students as well. One of the other things that we did was we took together all the technology tips possible and kind of took some data from our students to see what technology tips they had. These tips were chosen for the week of digital citizenship. They were announced on the loudspeaker, and we are accumulated all this data, all these tips, and we're going to create one big poster to, you know, keep it around the school in the cafeteria to remind kids all the time. One of the things that really was a healthy risk this year at Matlin was the video contest. And I just got to applaud Ms. Toriano because she really thought outside the box on this one, and it was a complete success. She really kind of took a step back and said, you know, how can we utilize these kids' skills? This is the life that, this is the generation that we're in. And instead of sitting there and telling them what they should or shouldn't do, we kind of tapped into their technology skills and said, you know what? What does it mean to you to be a digital citizen? And in our school climate club, the Pride Approach, we kind of came up with the title of hashtag play or part, Pride Play Your Part. And what does that mean is in play your part in obviously your videos and your, but what does it mean to be a digital citizen, and what do you have to do to play your part in this community for that? So it was a complete success. It was something a little bit different, and we're really happy because eighth grader Julia Sprung and fifth grader Emma Sprung, with their great values and morals from their mom and dad, so thank you. Yeah. They are, come up here, girls. Yes, we should definitely come. These are our wonderful winners for this year, for our digital citizenship video contest winners, and they're first annual, yes, first annual, and they really went for it.
Yes, we'd love to show you.
Yeah.
Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and more. These are all just a few social networking sites that allow anyone in the world to share photos with their friends and family, sometimes even strangers. Pretty much, if you don't limit your followers or friends to only people you know, anyone in the world can see your pictures if they wanted to. While these social networking sites aren't fun, they're also dangerous, and there's some important tips to keep in mind when using them to keep you safe. Now, Emma is a user of Instagram who defies some of these suggestions. Let's take a look at what she does.
Oh, look! Bob123 wants to follow me. I'll text Ari and ask her if she knows who he is.
Hey, Ari! Do you know who Bob123 is? He tried to follow me on Instagram.
No, let him follow you anyway. Followers are more important.
Thanks!
Okay, I'll accept him anyway. Anything to get more followers.
Freeze. Okay, Emma just accepted Bob as a follower, but we don't even know he or she is.
Suggestion number one is never accept anyone as a follower you don't know.
Bob123 direct messaged me. Hey, what's your name? I'm Bob. It's Emma. And I'm 10 years
old. Freeze again! Okay, Emma just gave Bob, we don't know if that's Bob's name, a bunch of personal information. And Bob could be anyone in the world.
Never give any personal information out.
I don't think this is a good idea. I'm gonna block Bob123 and never, ever do anything like this again.
Thank you for your attention. As you can see, there was a lot of excitement, and we look forward to next year, hopefully moving into the elementary schools as well.
So can we have that on the website?
Of course.
The video?
Yes, absolutely.
That would be great.
Thank you.
Again, Ms. Lynn, I just really want to applaud your efforts. And I think one of the nicest things that came from this was not only the kids learning, but how just our administrators were cheering each other on, and just from one seed idea from Dr. Lewis, how it just really expanded across the board and generated so much interest and excitement. And you just see all the different facets and levels of this, that it, how it hit the kids. And if you notice the positive spin, too, it wasn't all about the negative about the internet and our safety. So again, thank you. I'm so impressed.
Thank you, everyone. It was over the top. Really good. Thank you.
I just like to add, about 5 or 6 years ago, when we started talking about, you know, kids online, what they were getting into, there was a lot of concerns that we weren't modeling or teaching them proper behavior. So they were just doing whatever their older siblings did, whatever trouble they got into by accident. I'm so excited to see that it's happening in health classes, in the library, becoming media centers, and the central core of where we learn about media and how to use media, and that teachers are working together with students, and students are teaching other students. I hope this is something that can really take some foot and, you know, become something annually that gets bigger and bigger and bigger, because you got to teach these kids. You can't assume they know it and they forget it, and you just got to keep hammering them that it's great, the social media is wonderful, but it's an all new world and this stuff stays forever. So do positive things and leave a positive footprint. I think you guys did a great job, so thank you so much.
I would just like to say I think our elementary kids should see that video.
Yes.
Because kids relate to children very differently.
That's what I want to put
and
on
that
the
whole
website.
Thought process of all of a sudden, you know, getting caught in and dragged into something, and then all of a sudden the wheels start to, this is wrong. I think when kids, especially our kids, could talk to each other, I think it would be fantastic.
You know, when kids leave us and we set them off into the world, whether it's for career or college, you know, there's so many skills that we want to make sure they have, and this is one of the most important ones. This is something that affects their life and how they treat others, and it's just so important. And I just want to share with you, I was at Matlin a few weeks ago at the career fair, and I saw Ms. Toriato, and I said, so what's going on at Matlin? And she's like, I had these kids, these two sisters, they made this video, it's unbelievable, they're so great. And all the kids, you were praising all the kids' videos. She was so impressed with what was turned in, so she's very proud of you, and it really did a fabulous job.
Great job.
You know, one of the things we talk about is college, career, and citizenship. You know, we're really trying to infuse in a lot of things, not just college and career, but to do the three C's. And this really embraces all three. So thank you.
Thank you. Great job.
Well done.
Okay, a couple of weeks ago, we had the NISBA convention, and we're going to update you on some of the other reports. Emily, you're going to go first?
Sure. You know, I attended a number of seminars. A couple that I wanted to highlight were, the first one actually had to do with mental health, and it was, the presenter was Gil Noam, who has started a program. It's called PAIR, Program in Education, After School, and Resiliency. It has a pretty fancy pedigree, Harvard and McLean Hospital in you know, the Cambridge area in Massachusetts are using it. And the takeaway in terms of our district is to, you know, focus on a developmental approach and to focus on social, emotional, and behavioral needs, recognizing children's strengths and not just their weaknesses, and to model and reinforce social emotional skills, including persistence, collaboration, and self-management. There's all kinds of research. I know a number of administrators have been talking about the Carol Dweck book, Mindset. And, you know, there's Martin Seligman, who's talked about, you know, learned helplessness and learned optimism, and how, you know, really transformative that can be, what narratives you tell yourself. One of the, which is obviously useful to everybody, in terms of takeaway for Plainview Old Beth Page, one of the things that I thought was interesting was he talked about students with mental health issues, and overall, this wouldn't particularly be true of POB, what tends to happen is the students with the most significant behavioral needs and mental health needs get treated reactively. They do something, and then the system responds. And what PEAR does is attempts to look at the tier below that, who may have mental health issues but are not necessarily accessing the care that they need. Something like 1 in 5 students at that level is, you know, getting the help he or she needs. And that traditional methods tend to be kind of fragmented, and that a holistic approach is needed. They were looking at some communities that may be of a different socioeconomic status, and the importance of partnering with community groups and community professionals. One teacher who was present was talking about how she does mindfulness meditation with her students, which is great, but not everybody knows how to do mindfulness meditation. And you know, you can't ask teachers to be experts on everything. So one of the things that this program has done is partnered with community professionals to help, you know, for example, some families may be from cultures that stigmatize mental illness. So you need to partner with members of the community who can maybe address some of those issues. And, you know, a lot of this was in the context of just how important mental health is in terms of, well, obviously everything, but including learning, and that trauma stresses the brain and can cause memory impairment, impairment in cognition, and lack of coping skills. So, you know, this all sounds kind of fuzzy, but what was interesting to me was there did seem to be a model that they had that employed members of the community to attempt to address these needs and not, you know, put all of the stress on the school. Other conferences that I attended, one was on starting a special education program more or less from scratch. It was a school district on Long Island that was sending a lot of kids out of district, and what they did was they looked at bringing students back in district. And I guess the big buzzword that I kept thinking of was holistic approach, look at everything in the environment, the same way this PEAR program needed to look at everything in the environment. And the final speaker I just wanted to talk about was David Berliner, and he's somewhat tendentious in what he talks about. He has a book out that just came out this year, 50 Myths and Lies That Threaten America's Public Schools. So he clearly has a strong perspective and has written another book called Collateral Damage, How High-Stakes Testing Corrupts America's Schools. So clearly he has a point of view. But one of the things that he emphasized, which I happen to agree with personally, and I think it's important to hear, is that, you know, there's a lot of gloom and doom about how terrible America's schools are. And one of the things he emphasizes is that our schools are actually doing a pretty good job. If you look, the example we always get is Finland. Look at what a great job those Finns are doing. And one of the things he said was that middle-class kids in America tend to do better than middle-class kids in Finland. And that we're actually doing pretty well. And he also said that this is, you know, sort of an age-old problem that goes back to, who is it, Herodotus, who said something like, oh, the times and the morals, you know, complaining about the youth then. And he had a great cover from, I think it was Life magazine, whatever it was. It was from, like, the Sputnik era, like, how we're falling behind the USSR. So, you know, this is not an old, you know, this is a fairly old story. And the other thing that he emphasized is, in terms of all other things being equal, he showed us statistics on kids from one state versus kids from another state, and asked us which students do you think are doing better. And, you know, without thinking about it, you're going to look at socioeconomically the richer states, those kids are going to tend to do better, which is exactly what happens. So one of the things he emphasized is that there are a lot of other external factors, which again fits with my overarching theme that I'm attempting to construct here, that, you know, you have to look holistically, and that a lot of variation and factors occur outside of the school day. Anyway, it was interesting, and even if I didn't agree with everything he had to say, and as I said, he certainly had a point of view.
Thank you. I attend one of the important and interesting seminars I attended was called Demystifying the Park Assessments. This coupled with all of the things that we attended at the law conference, I'm going to have to find a conference and seminar that's happy, because I feel like I'm like the bearer of bad news at these meetings. So the question they ask is, is our school district prepared for the computer-based park assessments? PARC stands for Partnership Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers. So this seminar talked about implementation, including instructional shifts and technical requirements. Currently, the New York State Board of Regents voted not to participate this coming year in the PARC assessments. But the New York State Education Department is developing computer-based testing. 14 states are participating this spring in the PARC assessments. New York has opted out due to the length of the test, the technical capacity issue, and they want to see how the other states fare with this kind of exams. The Board of Regents is thinking about participating in this 2015-16 school year. So what's the PARC's vision? Well, they feel it's high quality assessments that are Common Core aligned. They feel the kids will be more engaged in testing, that students will not only have to know content, but they will have to be able to negotiate the technology. This technology and methodology of questioning will certainly require districts to provide more staff development and student practice. For example, they gave an example. A question might ask the student to drag and drop their work along certain measurement tools in order to arrive at the correct answer. I didn't understand it, but we're going to have to prepare our staff and our students to successfully navigate the structure of these exams. So this is how the five components of PARC are going to be broken out. There's going to be diagnostic assessment of ELA literacy and math grades 2 to 8. There's going to be mid-year assessment grades 3 to 11. However, this is optional, and New York State is not sure at the moment if they're going to require that. There's going to be a speaking and listening assessment, grades 3 through 11. That may be optional. Performance-based assessments, ELA, literature, and math, will be required to be delivered in April, and then again in June. Then they reviewed the testing costs and time factor. Supposedly, the test costs will be the same as the written test costs. However, that doesn't account for equipment, maintenance, staff development, etc. Depending on the number of computers a district has available will determine how many days testing will occur. Districts will only have 20 days maximum to complete the testing. It is estimated that a PARC exam will be 8 hours for elementary school children, 9 hours for grades 4 to 5, 9.5 hours for upper middle grades and high school students. They recommended that Chromebooks are the recommended tablet because they are the best for PARC and Common Core. and they recommended that there be one device for every two students, minimum. Current equipment in districts, they said, whatever equipment we have, they tell us may not be adequate in 2 years down the line once the testing begins. Then they talked about certain assessment accommodations for disabilities, and that might include a familiar test administrator, extended time for the test, a certain time of day, special lighting, adaptive furniture, and New York State is currently developing other accommodation regulations. And I know you'll love this one, guys. They referred us to the following website to help us launch this initiative, and the website is park.pearson.com. So that I have to find a happy seminar to attend. I really do. That's it.
And I thank you for that in-depth report on that. I know it was it last year or the year before during the budget we talked about money, you know, for computers and stuff to take park tests. And, you know, my opinion of the state's ability to do this hasn't changed at all. And yeah. I just think it's insane for us to invest money in test giving for, you know,
materials.
Technology.
I
don't have faith in the test being reliable. I don't have faith in the test being reliable when they take the test. It's actually going to be up for the whole 3 to 9 hour period when, you know, an entire population of a school district or Long Island or what have you can run it. We know the federal government's unable to get healthcare websites to stay up for more than 3 days in a row. And now you're going to test every school kid in the state at the same time on a aging infrastructure. I just find this to be a folly. That's, you know, I just will have a very hard time supporting any money and any budgets that support park tests.
I don't know what the legal requirements will be, though, from New York State and State Ed, and then what's going to happen if we're unprepared. It's a real problem. It's a real quandary, and it's a tremendous financial implication.
This is part of the problem, too, that they expect the kids to use a keyboard, and a lot of younger kids don't use keyboards.
Yeah. In our district, looking at a keyboarding program for our students, because if
the New York State tests are going to be online, then the question is, what keyboarding skills are we going to have in order to be able to take those online tests, whether we go to PARC or not? See, the issue is not whether New York State will adopt PARC. The bottom line is New York State in 17-18, which are the current kindergarten students, will be delivering their tests online. They've said it's not a light switch, so that it won't be that in 17-18 every single test will be online. But there will be tests that will be online in 17-18, and districts will have the option for over a certain number of years as to whether they will take it online or do take paper copies. But the act of putting it online literally makes the test longer. Mm-hmm. There's some validity issues that we're fighting through. Currently, the high school PARC exam, ELA and math combined, 15 hours.
That's ridiculous.
And, you know, the article that I sent around today from Washington Post, there was someone who wisely said that children will be spending more time taking PARC assessments than candidates for the bar exam. So that our PARC assessment, assuming they take it once, the PARC assessments will be far more longer in length than candidates sitting for a bar exam. 15 hours for children for math and ELA, 15 hours. ACTs, 3 hours. SATs, 3 hours. PARC, 15 hours.
So what is the penalty of as a district we refuse to participate in PARC testing?
We're not there yet anyway.
We'll talk about it in 3 years.
But you got to set the stage first. So,
well, I don't know if in 3 years who's going to be around in terms of the Board of Regents. No, I'm serious. this is a conversation that's going across state lines. Mm-hmm. You see, the best thing that has happened is that they become so ridiculous that everyone is now paying attention. 15 hours for a test, a set of tests. I mean, the average person, think about it, 15 hours. Like, it has become so ridiculous that nobody needs to create an argument for them. Mm-hmm. They've created their own argument.
Well, that was
so.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you.
Someday you're going to be as good news.
I am a bronchopharmacist.
All right, that brings us to... Anyone else have any comments?
Yeah.
What did I feel?
Amy.
Yeah. No.
It's not my turn to give my school board convention report, but I had asked if there was something that I learned on the convention floor that was timely, so I just wanted to bring it up. And that is Infinite Campus and the parent portal. That's a question that's come up a lot from our parents. And when I was at the convention, I visited the booth for Infinite Campus, and I asked them, why do we have to bring the portal down for so long before grades are officially posted? And his response was, you don't have to bring it down that long. Most schools bring it down a few days just to give teachers a chance, you know, because if they do it in dribs and drabs, then, you know, parents think the grade is something other than what the final grade will end up being. He said, but, you know, we seem to do it longer. And then when I came home, I had gotten a call. The reason I asked also was from a parent who said at the elementary level that it was posted that as of November 10th, you might find that Infinite Campus, the parent portal, might be up and down because teachers are posting things. And I'm thinking November 10th, because the trimester closes November 26th, and then the report cards are posted December 5th. So why are we bringing it down December 10th? So that was my question. What's the rationale between bringing it down for so long, and do we need to? Because this is the mechanism that we communicate with parents, and the longer it's up,
right,
and this is when they really need to see
the And I appreciate that you brought the question to us so that we could somewhat be prepared.
I looked into that that matter, and basically what we've been doing has been allowing the teachers approximately 2 weeks, maybe a little bit longer, particularly at the elementary level, to enter into their trimester grades and all the write-ups into the report cards, with the Monday after Thanksgiving being the day that they should be finishing up, and then the principal's time to review all the report cards before posting them and going forward. As you can imagine, it does take a little bit of time, including managing the building, to get all that done. So that's been the traditional way that we've been looking at it. Can we shorten that time? That's what we're going to look into and see what we can do to back that down a little bit and make it reasonable on both ends for the teachers to get their information on this, so that it's logical, it makes sense to the parents, and it's correct, and that the principals have an opportunity to read everything and reflect and talk with teachers if need be before we actually post them up for parents to be
able. That's at the elementary level?
Yes.
At the secondary level?
We've been following the same guidelines, so it's kind of been doing, we've been just doing it along, so we have to adjust that, you know, on the secondary level.
It's 1 week for the, they pick it up a week to allow teachers to post grades.
Right. So at the secondary, it's 1 week,
yes,
and at the elementary, it's 2 weeks.
Yes, I apologize, I should have said it.
Mm-hmm. Friday.
But the teacher, is there a policy or a practice for the teachers to post the grades as they occur, you know, like, are they holding on to the grades and then waiting till the end to post it, or are they continuously posting after the?
They're pretty much continuing. I'll let Jill answer too. They're pretty much continuing as they are entering the information by student. They're saving as they go. So if you don't close the portal, you'll have, you know, you may get your student's grades, but I may not get mine, because it'll be visible, and why does some get some and some don't get others? So that's why you get them all in, you verify them, and then you go from there. Ms. Garrett?
I mean, we don't have a set amount of time, but, you know, we do ask teachers within a week's time frame to return the exams or grades to the students first before the parent sees it, so that the student has an opportunity to speak to the teacher, and then it gets posted after that. So typically, it's a 2 week, but, you know, a week to get the grades back to the students, and then within the next week to get those grades posted.
So, are you asking about the entire portal or the grade book portion of the portal, because it is very possible to have the portal open and the grade book not available. So are parents talking about, no, I mean, you could have attendance information. Is it only grades that parents are interested in? Not attendance and all the other things that are the other functions of Infinite Campus?
You know, I feel like our schools are pretty good with attendance to call parents when there's an attendance issue. I think they worry more about, you know, you can ask the PTAs, but yeah, from my experience, that's why we got this tool to continuously, you know, keep them current on how their children are doing, so that if they have an issue, they can go to the teacher and you know, if to have it down for 3 weeks more, it's especially right before a report card.
All right, I'll have a conversation with the principals about the length of time. I do know that at the elementary level, that it's a considerable amount of writing, and that, you know, you want to make sure that spelling errors aren't there. You know, it's not just a number that they're putting in. So I can really understand why the elementaries would need a bigger window than the secondary.
Well, on the secondary, they're finishing up with testing, they're grading papers, they're doing things before they put the numbers in. They want to make sure they finish up all the grading and testing on things, too. So 5 days is actually, from my previous life, is actually a pretty quick turnaround. It's much much quicker than I had.
You know? Right. Yeah, so 5 days. So I thought it was just, I thought that the portal was what you were referring to. So the portal doesn't have to be closed, but the gradebook portion of the portal. So what I'm hearing from you is that that's the only portion that you care about, which is really surprising because there's a ton of features on Infinite Campus that maybe we should have parents exploring.
Yeah, I want to keep in mind the elementary report cards, you know, although they might not have the same number of students as the high school, they're also, the way they're inputting the information is a little bit different. Like, they're going to have to input all the math scores. So they're not working on one child's report card at one time, putting in the math, the ELA, the science. They're doing math for every kid.
For elementary.
Right. And
yes,
then it's more detailed process. Plus, there's a comment section that we encourage teachers to write remarks as well. That's for something that may not be included there. And as Vince said, then the principal actually really reviews those report cards, not only for accuracy, but to talk about students and make sure that everyone's on the same page, and reading teachers and other people are inputting information. So again, that process and making sure that the information is presented to parents accurately and reflects the work that the student did. Because at the elementary level, teachers aren't recording grades on the portal.
So on the grade book.
Yeah, on the grade books, you know, on a regular basis.
Yeah, I was just wondering, for the comments at the elementary level, my only familiarity is at the, you know, at the high school level, and when I had to use Infinite Campus myself when I was teaching, there were, how can I put it, canned comments.
Yeah.
You weren't actually supposed to enter. Is that different at the elementary level, or are those freestyle?
We do have canned comments that teachers can select from, but for the most part, I'm going to say the majority of teachers personalize the comments.
Personalized. But it's like an elementary
again,
report.
There are certain comments and things that they could pull from.
Is there anything we can do to just make that easier for the elementary teachers to enter into Infinite Campus? If it's that, I know we had a customize it, because our report card really wasn't in it, but times pass. Can we revisit with Infinite Campus and just see if there is a way to make that more streamlined or easier for them to import the data?
Yeah, that is actually a current discussion that I've just had recently with the principals about the way, I would prefer that a teacher enters, you know, Gary Batan looks at the whole child as they're entering that information rather than jumping from one subject to the next. But again, that's something that we could look at, and next year we'll be looking at the middle school report cards as well, revising them to be standards-based. So these are all part of the discussions.
But I'm still trying to figure out, at the elementary level, if you're not using the grade book, why is there a concern that the portal is closed? Because the only time you would see it is when the grade book, when the report cards are ready. I don't see, I see the issue at the secondary.
Right.
I don't understand, if that's the only reason you're looking at the portal for the grade, for the report cards.
Well, what else do they use in elementary school? Do they put announcements there and information for the parents?
Well, that's the bigger question I have, because
yeah,
I'm
right.
used to having Infinite Campus as a vital
right.
message board,
right.
and also for notification about assignments and, you know, all of those things. But as to the grade book has to be closed in order to do
right.
that. But I have, in the past, I mean, I've been using Infinite Campus for quite a long time. It's a pretty robust piece of equipment.
So maybe the grade book closed, but everyone wants to be open. That's
right.
What,
but
that's
I don't,
exactly
but from what I'm
right.
hearing, parents only want the grade book portion.
Well, that's at the secondary. Yeah.
But
right.
there are no grades in elementary.
Right.
So I can't understand why that's an issue at the elementary level.
Because they can fall for a couple of days, but it's 5 days.
Right.
It's not the norm.
Because if you think back on what this has replaced, you've replaced report cards.
Right.
And report cards came out one day. They didn't come out over a 2-week window. They
right.
happened or they didn't happen.
Right.
So I'm not sure what if that's an issue at the elementary. As much as it is,
I guess
at the
it was just
the
notification that November 10th the portal will be down, and then
right.
the period the marking period doesn't end until.
I get it for secondary.
So I don't know what they thought, what they use it for, or what
right.
they expected to see.
So
or
that's the investigation we have to have.
Good question, Amy.
Yeah, and thank you for asking ahead of time, so we.
And now that brings us to public participation. District Policy 1510.1 provides that persons wishing to make comments or raise questions shall, one, state their name and address, and two, indicate on whose behalf they are speaking if a non-resident. The policy prohibits public discussions on matters relating to staff and students at which their reputation, privacy, or rights to due process or those of others could in some way be violated. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes.
Nina Melzer, I know this is tremendously loud, and you'll probably hear me anyway. I just wanted to shed some light on the elementary school process for the report cards, basically. It does take us a long time to get those assessments done, especially if we're working in the earlier grades. I may want a more updated score for some of the things that are on the report card, how many letters my children can ID, how many numbers they can write. I may have done that back in September or October, but now it's, you know, 5 or 6 weeks later. I've done some work with the children, and so now I'm going to go through and do some of those things again. So you may not, you don't have the ability to put all the scores in at once. We're not taking averages of things like you may be doing in a middle school, and the Infinite Campus also does, you know, we are putting comments in. We're seeing the parents for parent-teacher conferences a few days later, but we're still writing comments to possibly explain why a child might have gotten a particular grade if it was a below-standard grade on their report card. So you really do have to look at the whole child, and if we were doing the report cards, it used to take us 2 to 3 weeks to go through all of those assessments to write the report cards. The fact that we're doing digitally doesn't necessarily mean that it's a quicker process for us. We also, the problem with that we have with Infinite Campus is, as a teacher, when you're inputting those grades, you don't have the capacity to see the whole report card at the same time. You're constantly flipping back and forth between the math, the ELA, the social skills scores, and it really makes it very difficult to view a whole child. So it is a time-consuming process for us. We're doing it, and we're doing assessments with the kids while we have the other kids in the class. So you don't necessarily, as in the secondary schools, you may be able to give a test in one period and get some grades for those students. But with us, it may take me a week to get through some of those assessments for ELA, and then it may take me another few days to get through the assessments for the math, if I want the most up-to-date information to be put on the report card to give a valid picture of that child. So it does take us a little bit of time in the elementaries. And again, I'm not 100% sure what else the parents might be using the portal for, because in kindergarten, I'm not putting anything on there until the report card grades.
Right.
I don't know about first, second, third grade, but that's just, it's a time-consuming process, so.
Thank you. I just want to remind you that on the elementaries, we're on trimester reporting, so as Nina really just reiterated, you know, that time you want to have the most accurate information prior to that rollout in early December. And we're coming up into Thanksgiving, and then those grades are out.
Jacques Wolfner, 151 Sutton Drive. After listening to Evie's comments about the park testing and hearing all about the other testing that we're required to do, the regents and the Common Core testing and all of those things, does that leave any time for teaching, or are we going to substitute testing for teaching? I want to also discuss the bond referendum. I know that there's going to be a lot of publicity to the PTA and others, but the general population in Plainview Old Beth Page hasn't seen much. I think there was a squib in the Penny Saver, and that's about it. Yes, by limiting the publicity to those, gerrymandering the publicity, if you will, you'll get it passed, but you will have a lot of resentment from the general population who are not actively involved with the school district.
We sent out a bond newsletter about a month ago, about 3 weeks ago, and this week, there will be another newsletter, a one-pager newsletter. We have e-blasted, we have put stuff on the website, but we've done two mailings, and we have done a Penny Saver. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I saw the Penny Saver.
Did you see the bond newsletter?
Yes.
And that went to every house. Right. And we have a one-pager coming out this week.
Well, I'm stressing the importance of including the entire community. Yes.
This goes to every single house. So we've done electronic and we've done hard copies.
Yeah, the electronic doesn't work for the general public because many of the more mature citizens don't.
We went to the senior citizens and we did, there were about 200 members there. Okay. We presented to them.
Chamber of Commerce,
we've presented to them, and you tell us where you'd like us to be, and we'll be there. Yeah. Water district is the same day, and there.
Yes.
Also. So if you have a suggestion, Jacques, I'll
No,
be
I
there.
Don't have a suggestion. I
so
just,
we've done
I'm mailing. Just talking about more publicity for the general.
Are we going to
that's what
like
I'm saying. What would you
bond,
think?
The electronic. Placards or anything in front of the schools? Or anything like that, like
you know,
do for regular
if,
vote?
No.
If people are not involved with the schools, they're probably not going to bookmark the school district.
No, but they receive these two.
Yes, I know they do. Okay. I just do want to point out the importance of involving the entire community, and I think you are trying. On routine business, I have some questions that I'd like to have answered or discussed in full in public session. 8.1, the SEC filing, Security and Exchange Commission.
Yep.
8.3, the CEQA determination. And then 8.7 and 8.8, which are donations to, once to the middle school and once to TAG. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure, I'll walk around like that. That'd be a good idea. Hand them out at ShopRite.
All right, do we have a motion for routine business? Ginger, Emily, hold separations? Discussions? You going to take some of them, right? Oh, all those in favor? All right, now the discussions. Oh, that's a new business. Yes. Okay, you want to?
Yeah, sure.
The ones
8.1 is our annual information disclosure required by the Security and Exchange commission, and that includes our financial statements. 8.3 is a contract with a local engineering firm to guide us through the CEQA determination process so that we can make a recommendation to the board acting as a lead agency related to the work for POB Middle School track. 8.7 is a donation of a printer and a tablet. And 8.8 is a donation of numerous games from SNAP for our after-school tag program. Questions? Thank you.
I just wanted to comment on, number one, we appreciate the donations. And number two, SNAP in particular, I know, has really partnered with the school district to provide a lot of these games for students with autism and ways to engage them.
And shame on me that I didn't even mention it, but I should have. I had the opportunity, and I will be highlighting it. That will be my highlight, actually, to attend the Thanksgiving celebration at the Matlin for the Matlin program. And I have to tell you, that kitchen, they made such a wonderful, wonderful meal. The children did an outstanding presentation, and that kitchen was donated by SNAP.
The Donor's Choice, the other one, Mr. McNamara can tell me if I'm wrong, that's a website where teachers can post things that they need for their classroom, and people go to the website and they donate. So someone out there in cyber world donated money to for our teachers' request for POB Middle School, so thank them, too.
Thank you, whoever you are.
Business. 10.1, amend policy 3210, visitors to the school with changes. Debbie? Emily? Discussions? All those... Okay. No, where is that? No, I pulled up the wrong thing. I'm commenting for myself. Right. All visitors are expected to abide by this policy and the rules for public conduct on school property contained in the district's code of conduct.
The question, I remember, I don't know if it was at the last meeting or the meeting before, a PTA president from the high school came up with a suggestion and then had sent it to us. So what happened to that suggestion?
So that suggestion was taken back to the building principals, who felt that what they currently have in place, they're comfortable with. The issue is when they have a large group of visitors, they would be violating the policy. So why establish something in policy that they know they don't have the resources to address?
So does the policy cover a situation where someone suspect is in the building when there aren't students there? What do we have the right to approach them and ask them what their business is in school, or we don't?
I don't think you need policy.
Well,
7 says that. Any unauthorized person on school property will be reported to the principal as a heard designee. Unauthorized persons will be asked to leave or enforcement will be called to the situation more.
Well, what makes an unauthorized person when it's in the evening and there aren't students? Like, I think, you know, that was the intent, that if there is somebody in the schools at night, how do you have the right to walk up to them and ask them their name and ask them their business in the school? What makes them an unauthorized person when it's the evening hours, I guess? That was the intent, I think. Council, I don't, you know, that was That was the intent of making that suggestion, I think, to the policy.
No, the intent was to establish a process. This is what maybe I communicated that incorrectly to the principals. It was specific that we required all visitors to the building to sign it.
That was the suggestion. It was may require.
No, the principals
meaning that
have
it gave them the discretion.
Do you have the comment? Could you read
right.
it?
Right. I'm just telling you that when it went back to now, this is the board's policy, and the board may absolutely put that in. But when they have large groups in the building, they cannot exercise that policy, whether they liked it or not. So it's really will be, you may do that. If that's what the board wishes, then it may come back to you to have the resources to be able to fulfill that policy. That's what I understood.
Who's at the principal's discretion?
Doesn't it lighten it by saying may? It's not enforced. In other words, if you there's just 50 people, yeah. there's one person you're concerned about.
Right, and the principals felt that they had that, they can do that now. And that putting it, I mean,
by number seven.
But if the board wishes, this is your policy, and if you wish to do that, I'm just suggesting that once you do that, you may need to put some resources behind it. But they felt that they had enough guidance.
So they felt they had the ability to do that now.
Yes.
Okay. That's the common thought. But to answer
right.
your question,
and
Amy, they'd say may be required to sign in and show identification.
Right.
But the unlawful entry in number seven kind of
right,
gives you that
seven.
Authority
right.
to begin with. So that was
but,
the thought process.
And they pointed out that the issue arose from an incident in the high school where, in fact, there was a security guard at the entrance, and that security guard was supposed to have signage. So, at the high school, the security guards have that ability, whereas in the other buildings they don't. I mean,
we don't want to put anything in the policy that would tie a principal's hands and
right.
force
that's
them to do
felt.
Something. And I wouldn't want them to do anything that right. was not secure. I just don't want to tie their hands. If they feel they need to
that
do it and they
want
to do it, I want them to have the right to do it. And I thought they didn't.
And they felt they had the right
then.
As per number seven.
Okay.
To ask for identification.
Right.
I mean, because here it says unauthorized persons will be asked to leave.
Yeah.
I thought that they were, the parents were concerned with asking to get identification of the person that nobody knew who was.
You have to look at number four. Visitors attending school functions that are open to the public after regular school hours, such as parent-teacher organization meetings or public gatherings, are not required
to
register.
Actually, by saying are not required, are not required. So right. that means that they
the
don't have
so
to.
So they may refuse.
They may not be required.
I think it's a slippery slope a little bit because if we don't know a person and that person comes and they're a resident, they have a kid in the building, but they choose not to share whatever information, you have to be careful. Is it discrimination you're looking at and you're profiling in your own head who this person is
right.
or isn't?
What happened.
But you have to remember number two also asks that at the point of entry, sign the visitor's registrar.
Right.
Therefore identifying themselves too. So
yeah, but that's talking
coming
about
into the building.
During school hours. But the issue arose from an incident that occurred after school hours. And we were trying to put in that practice that we have in place during school hours for after school hours. And the principals felt that they did not have the resources to do that.
So the issue is the after-school hours. It's not during
yes.
the school hours.
During school,
right now,
have that in place.
There's a change that's being proposed.
Correct.
There's motion on it. That doesn't preclude us from going back and looking at this policy
Absolutely.
And trying to address it.
Absolutely.
So my suggestion would be that we consider this, and then we look into other ways to address the, the after-school issue.
So I don't know if there is a motion. If there isn't, I'll make the motion. I'll second it. Okay, so then.
Can I inquire? You know, what you're talking about is simply the old type of number 8. Is that what you're...
Suggestion was made.
There was a community suggestion.
That is the change that is already in the policy for us to vote on.
Isn't that the motion that Stephanie was talking about?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So that motion doesn't have anything to do with the debate.
Correct.
Well, we circulated the policy, and this was a comment that came out of the circulation of the policy. So don't we need to address that before we adopt the policy?
The community requested.
Well, no, what Seth is really saying is that we can adopt this, and then we look at the issue. There's nothing to preclude us. To relook at the issue and then propose another change.
Or you could now, you could also amend it now. You don't have to adopt.
But we're not prepared to do that at this moment.
Right.
From what I understand...
Nice work, Greg.
The power of my personality. From what I understand from that portion of the debate that I've heard, you can't, as I see it, you can't make the inquiries you want to make without a registration. If you don't, if you're simply allowing anybody to come in who's a member of the public, then you have no basis for an inquiry as to who are you.
That's why.
You've already invited everybody.
Yeah.
So you can't mix
those. I mean, you're not going to have a security guard.
You're going to address the issue of who's authorized and who's not authorized at the school, and you have to address the issue of what's open to the public.
Right, and so you would have to put some resources behind a sign-in personnel after hours.
Well, like, you'd have to do that for parent-teacher conference. In
connection with events that are legitimately open to the public, parent-teacher night is not one. Then there isn't even a limitation that you have to be a parent.
Right. That's what the purpose.
You have to be a resident.
No. But how do you establish their resident if you don't?
No.
There is.
Are you open to the public?
Okay.
Well, the public.
So
the public is broader than playgroup.
So there's a PTA meeting going on, and someone enters the building. They might not enter the PTA meeting. They might enter the building, and they're wandering around the halls of the high school. Well, they're in the school building.
You have to decide what the scope of your problem is. You have to, in the broadest sense, when you start off with those occasions when you are truly open to the public, the PTA is putting on a play. People come in to see. That's open to the public. There's no inquiry that you can make under that circumstance. Who are you and why?
Okay.
Now you have. Now
that's the answer.
More limited access. You're not open to the public on a night when you have authorized the use of a facility to a particular organization that's filled out there. Unless that organization is in itself opening its forum to the public, then you can legitimately inquire, but you have to have a process. That goes back to, you have to have a registration if someone comes in and says, I'm here for the PTA.
They do have a sign-in book at PTA. They do register at Buildings and Grounds for the facility's use, PTA, and they do have a sign-in book when people enter their PTA meetings. So what do you do if some...
Under that circumstance, then you can assign somebody the task. It's not another PTA person, your facility. You can assign somebody the task of making that inquiry and then limiting your access to people who are there for that function. And that would be somebody like a security guard or an administrator. somebody who would have borrowed.
So we already
that's what they asked for.
Have that?
Well, he was there at the function.
Right?
I'm not saying you already have that. I'm saying
you could have it if you put this way.
Amy is saying that that's what they're doing. I'm saying if you do it that way, you can limit.
So do you guys think you could write us up a number 9 to explain what Greg has said?
There's a panoply of different opportunities here. When you use your facility, you have to address the individual.
So do you think our policy as it currently is addresses that, or should
well,
we just...
Well, I just read over Seth's shoulder, the only issue here is that you've divided it not by function, but by time of day.
Right.
When schools in session, you have a certain set of rules.
We do.
Like most school districts that I enter, right. Which I generally enter around 4 o'clock as I'm walking in, the guard's on the way out. Now the door is open, so it's just about anything. In order for you to limit your access after school hours, you have to have a legitimate reason. You have to identify the category, and then you have to man that desk again.
That's what the principals.
From a legal standpoint, it doesn't make sense.
That's what the principals were saying.
People able to walk in the door and then have a roving challenge.
Right.
So the principals
took...
That's exactly what the principals were saying. They looked beyond and saw the big issues. So.
With that,
yes, you can.
No.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, yeah, let's take a vote on the policy as amended on what we're looking at right now. Done. And we can always look into adding other things in the future. Emily, discussions?
Can I just ask, I'm assuming these were presented at the High School Curriculum Committee and a PTA meeting. Were there any, was there any feedback?
Mrs. Gear?
Any feedback? Actually, all positive comments about the coursework. I'm sorry, I should have shared that prior to even this discussion. So both at the PTA meeting and at the PTA Curriculum Council, the positive comments, hoping that the courses will run. You know, some of this will be based on enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
There was some discussion, again, about just the ESL course that wasn't on the list, but could we run a level 4 ESL? We explained that we were researching that, but you know, certification was an issue, and dividing up the class between a 3-4 level. So really those were the more important topics that had come up.
Thank you.
I didn't mention this when you presented the new courses last time, but the advanced French for beginners, I'm really glad we're doing that, because for years there have been kids who were completed Spanish and who were interested in foreign language and wanted to take another one, and we offered beginner Chinese and beginner ASL, but we didn't offer French and Italian, right, but not French 1, and I know, so I'm glad that we're doing that, and I hope it runs. I hope we get the enrollment we need so it runs.
Yeah, I think Mr. Murray is creating possibly a name change to that, so that it's better articulated, but I think that was, I haven't received that memo yet.
Yeah, I also wanted to say I was, impressed that we were able to work with the business department in foreign language to put those courses together. I thought that was really nice and something we've talked about for a while that we're finally doing. I thought that was great.
All right, all those in favor? Next, new business 11.1. We're going to get an update from Dr. Lewis before we go any further on that.
So I appreciate that the board is considering doing overnight trips, and I anticipate a full discussion in the future about how we might go about that. But as it's presented, when I first read it, I saw that, I assumed that there were no costs that were associated with it. And upon exploring further, there are significant costs that would be associated with the board's approval of the trip. Once the board has approved it, insurance and all the other things kick in, chaperone costs, and I'm not at the point where I can support that in a, as a budgetary item for, it would be the next school year, and we don't even have a budget for the next school year yet. But it would be a significant cost, and so I'm going to ask that we pull that, and that the board entertains a full discussion about some direction that they want to take with overnight trips.
Yeah, we'll try to get that in one of the next two meetings, because any discussion we have could have budgetary impact, so we got to move it up. So we'll work and get that on the floor so we can have a discussion about what the rules are going to be and policies on expanding for overnight trips. So we will address that more fully in a broad policy level in the future.
Thanks.
Next, we have Project Challenge field trips. Debbie, discussion? All those in favor? Next, we have resolution for appointment of officers for the December 9th, 2014 bond referendum. Ginger, Amy, hold separations discussions. I need a separate vote on the kid who's got the same last name as mine. We'll hold too. All right. So, all those in favor of everyone except the two held names. Well, no, we vote because we're okay.
Our held names are
cool. Okay, now. Now, the separate vote for the two names, the first name being the student. All those in favor?
Motion.
Sorry. Emily, Ginger, all those in favor?
Okay, this one I can write.
Yes. Okay. Noes, abstaining, me. Okay, next we have the motion for, officer of the bond election. Debbie, Ginger, all those in favor? Against?
One abstention.
Got to read it. We got to make sure you're on the record. Okay. And we're rolling. Okay. 11.4 is a resolution for personnel action. Do I have a motion? Ginger? Evie? Discussion? All those in favor? Next, great. Do I have a motion to enter into executive session for discussions of negotiations? Ginger, Emily, all those in favor? December 9th, bond vote, please vote. Tell your friends to vote, family members to vote. Let's turn out a lot of people. Jacques, you got to get the votes from all your friends, buddy. Have them vote.